Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. Anyone who has ever tried to run a multi-centre study knows that gaining ethical approval from each site can be a bureaucratic nightmare, costing time and money. Dr. Robin Clay-Williams is a Senior Research Fellow at the Australian Institute of Health Innovation at Macquarie University. Along with her co-authors, Dr. Natalie Taylor and Professor Geoffrey Braithwaite, she has written a perspective, published in the MJA on the 5th of March 2018, which details the 2.5 years it took to gain ethics approval for the Deepening Our Understanding of Quality in Australia study. Their perspective is available at www.mja.com.au and is open access until the 12th of March. Dr. Clay Williams is my special guest on the pod today. What is health services research?
It's research into health systems. So it's quite different to clinical research. So you can rarely do things like randomized controlled trials and things like that the way that you would do with clinical research, mm-hmm. because there's a lot more variability when you start looking into health services, and there's a lot more confounders that you can't control. So whilst we will sometimes do a quantitative study, and in the case of the study that we were talking about in regard to this ethics issue, mm-hmm. It was a quantitative study, so that's a study where it's statistical analysis. We often use qualitative analysis too, so rather than just the what or how much, we want to know the why and the how, and sometimes we'll do a multi-method type study where you do still take the quantitative data for the, you know, how much, but then you'll add a qualitative component to find out the and why, you know, why is that happening the way it is.
You mentioned the study that you're working on at the moment. Tell us a little bit about that.
We call it DUQA. What that stands for is Deepening Our Understanding of Quality in Australia. And it's got such a strange name because it's based on a study called DUQE, which is Deepening Our Understanding of Quality Improvement in Europe. So the DUQE study was conducted in 188 hospitals in 7 European countries.
Wow.
Between about 2010 and 2014. And what it was looking at is, I mean, we spend a lot of money doing quality and quality management in hospitals, mm-hmm. but we don't know if it actually makes a difference to patient outcomes. So what DUQE was looking at was to see, is there some association between the quality as we do it in hospitals and patient outcomes? And they looked at patient outcomes for AMI, so acute myocardial infarction, stroke and hip fracture and obstetrics. In the DUQA study, the Australian version, we just looked at AMI, stroke and hip fracture. What we find in Australia is obstetrics is often done in women's and children's hospitals,
yes.
Rather than always in the big public hospitals. So,
right.
So we dropped that one and just looked at 3. We're looking at associations between quality management and patient outcomes or patient factors. And it's a multi-level type analysis. So we're looking at relationships between quality, how it's done at the organisational level within hospitals and patient factors. And we're also looking at it at the department level for AMI, stroke and hip fracture, so the care pathway type level,
yep.
and patient outcomes for those 3 conditions. There's a number of different data collection tools that we're using. They involve things like surveys, so questionnaires.
Mm-hmm.
They involve things like audits. So we've sent people in to go and do audits, both at the hospital level and at the care pathway level. They involve also just data on patients. So we've done medical record reviews on patients for those 3 conditions, and also Australian Institute of Health and Welfare data. So data on mortality, readmission and length of stay for patients with those 3 conditions.
What part of that study requires ethics approval?
It's interesting because it's an observational study. It's not an intervention study. So
yeah.
So there's not any intervention at all involved. All we're doing is going into the hospitals and taking data on how the hospitals are performing. And you might think that that would be a fairly low-risk proposition, but only one of the ethics committees that we went to agreed on that. Everyone else felt that it was a high-risk study, so
wow.
We had to do a complete ethics application. Yeah.
So how many hospitals are we talking about?
Okay, so we started with 60 hospitals. So
yep.
We were looking at large public hospitals in Australia. There were 70 of them that met inclusion criteria,
mm-hmm.
and we initially managed to recruit 60 of those hospitals. So
okay.
That's hospitals in every state and territory of Australia.
Getting down to the subject of your perspective in the MJA, what barriers did you come across trying to get ethics approval across this larger multi-centre study?
Right. So the very first one we came across was there was no mutual acceptance of an ethics form. So for clinical studies, there's a national mutual acceptance. So what it means is you can go to a lead ethics committee anywhere in Australia, if it's a certified ethics committee, and get your approval for your study, and then you can carry out your study anywhere in Australia. So for health services research, when we started this study, which is a couple of years ago now, it didn't apply to health services research. So some states would accept having a lead ethics committee and others would not. So the long and the short of that was, rather than having one ethics application for our whole study, we had 10 ethics applications for our study. And one of them was a low risk, but the others were all full ethics applications.
Wow.
And to give you a feel for it, one of them, when we posted it off, weighed 7 kilograms.
Why is health services research seen or looked at differently by the ethics committees?
The conclusion that we came to was that they didn't really understand what we were doing. You know, because we were doing medical record reviews of patients, for example,
mm-hmm.
and we were doing things like looking at hospital performance, and both of those things are sensitive things. Like, if you're going to take hospital performance data from 60 hospitals across Australia and then plot them, you know, some hospitals will perform better than others. So that's a sensitive thing. And taking patient data, even though it's non-identifiable patient data, is still a sensitive thing as well. So that required ethics review. The actual applications themselves, it wasn't actually difficult to meet ethical requirements. It was more just that because we were going to so many different committees, everyone had slightly different requirements that they needed us to meet. So each of the forms is slightly different. Each of the things you had to meet was slightly different. And when you go to the committee and get the result back, they'd have different things that they want you to modify. When you've got a study that you're trying to standardise across the country, you can't actually modify for one ethics committee. So we had lots of back and forth, you know, trying to get these committees to agree to things. And in some cases, the committee just wouldn't agree. I mean, they've got a lot of power.
Yeah.
They could just say, no, you have to change this. So then we'd have to go back to ethics committees we've been to previously and say, well, hey, Can we put in an amendment and amend what we've done previously, because this particular committee won't change their view on something or other? So you end up with this sort of endless loop, you know, where you've got to keep going back and getting amendments for things. And the other thing with health services research too is that as you go through your research, you find that things change. So as you discover more about something, you know, your requirements would change a little. So there's a degree of flexibility with what you do. So it's not quite the same as like a clinical study where you would have your protocol. I mean, we had a protocol, but in a clinical study, you would have your protocol, it would be in concrete, and you would absolutely say what you're going to do. Health services research, you're trying to answer a question or find an answer to a problem. So if you find something that affects that problem, you may need to slightly change, you know, what you're collecting or how you're doing it. And that required us to then go back and change things with the ethics committee, because there's no flexibility with any of it. You know, once you say, so, for example, if you've got a survey that says you're going to go in there with a questionnaire and you're going to give this questionnaire to the quality manager and you're going to ask these 50 questions of the quality manager, and then you go into a hospital and you find that, you know, one of the hospitals wouldn't have, for example, you know, they might not have a hospital board, or they might not have a particular committee, or they might not have something.
Yes.
So you might have to then modify things slightly. To do that, you would then have to go back to each of the ethics committees and modify that question or that component of the question across all of the committees.
How much time has this cost you?
About 2.5 years or less to get
God.
Ethics for the whole
And does program. That does that translate into money?
Yes. So we've just put the figure down for 2015-2016 in the perspective, which we've said was $263,750. So it's actually longer than that. It actually took us 2.5 years to get ethics, so it's more than that. But that was the year in which the bulk was expended. The money was mostly to do with personnel costs.
Yes.
People to actually put the application together and monitor the application and chase the ethics committees for information of how to do things and so on and so forth.
And does all that have to happen before you can even start analysing data?
it has to happen before you can start collecting data. This is the other thing too. That's just the ethics. Once you get ethics, you've got to get specific site assessment for each hospital as well. And that's per hospital. So we had to get a separate one for every single hospital.
You're not the first multi-centre study to come up against this. Why are we still persisting with this ridiculous system?
That's a very good question. What it means is that it's very hard for people to do large multi-centre trials. So what you'll get is you'll get lots of piecemeal data, and it's very hard to generalise without doing a large trial. And it means people will not be able to do large trials because it's just too expensive and too time-consuming. The other thing that you find with it, because of the delays, is most, this is an NHMRC program grant that we're working under. Yeah. These grants only go for a couple of years. So you have to, you know, you have to get the whole project completed within that time. And it means that people can't do this large scale project within that amount of time.
Okay. So what's the answer? You've come up with a framework that you've suggested in your paper. What's the guts of that?
What we'd like, and we're getting towards that point, actually, what we'd like is a single ethics and governance review process that everybody recognises and agrees to. And we're nearly there. I think in the time since we started, more states have come on board with this national mutual acceptance for health services research. So we now have Victoria, South Australia, Queensland and New South Wales on board, and ACT joined just recently as well. So we just need West Australia, Northern Territory and Tasmania, and we'll have everybody on board. So we're nearly there, but so we need to have just one single process where you can go to one ethics committee, get ethics approval for your study, and then when you're reporting and so on, you're just reporting back to the single committee. So, for example, in our study with our 10 ethics committees, we've got annual and sometimes biannual reporting at each of those committees. And each of them's different, and often they have their own form that you have to report on as well. So you can't just, like, duplicate it 10 times and send it off. Everyone's got their own specific reporting requirements. Yeah, so what we'd like is just one single ethics and governance review process and one set of forms that, you know, everyone has the same forms and they all agree on the same thing.
So how do we get that to happen?
NHMRC is working on it, and they're sort of the national body, I guess, who's able to pull everyone together across Australia. It's like any state issue. Each of the states has their own processes, and you know, maybe having done our study, like, you know, we're doing our data analysis at the moment. Maybe when we can report on it, you know, we can show the benefit of actually having this large scale trial, because some of the things we found you won't find, you know, just doing things within a single state or within a single hospital, for example. So maybe, you know, if states can see the benefit of being part of a national system, you know, maybe they're more likely to come on board. It's not just an Australian problem. I mean, for the Duke study, the European one that we talked about, originally the UK was one of the countries. They had 8 European countries, and they had so much trouble with ethics with the UK, which is similar to Australia, that they dropped off.
Is this just a matter of getting the paperwork right, or is there a cultural change that needs to happen as well?
I think there's both. I definitely think there's both. A lot of the issues that we ran across were differences from one ethics committee to another ethics committee. So even within the same state or within the same city in the same state, you know, there'd be differences from ethics committee to ethics committee. So it's difficult to solve that. I mean, you need common guidelines, but you also need people to be on the same sheet of music when they review it. Ethics committees often have very individual responses to an ethics application. Part of it as well is, you know, an ethics committee is trying to minimise risk for their particular organisation, and they don't always know so much about what's happening elsewhere to be able to come up with a standardised way of doing it for everybody. In order to get agreement to conduct a research project in a hospital, there's a site-specific assessment. Part of that requires that you have a local principal investigator at that hospital. Now, we see that as a potential bias of the study, because you're coming in looking at the performance of a hospital, but you're required to have a local principal investigator that's an employee of that hospital on your application. So there's sort of a conflict of interest in there, and we see that as problematic. You should be able to come into a hospital without having someone from that hospital as part of the research team. The other issue is to do with research agreements. So there's a variable need for research agreements in hospitals across Australia. Some hospitals required them and some didn't. Some states require having a research agreement with each hospital. Some states are flexible and leave it up to the individual hospitals. With a research agreement, that can be difficult too. It becomes a legal agreement, which takes a long time to negotiate. Often it can be 6 or 12 months to negotiate your research agreement. And they worry about things like, you know, who has intellectual property, privacy, confidentiality, and things like that. These are all important things. But by negotiating individually with each hospital, you have different arrangements with each hospital, yes, which makes it very hard to do a standardised large-scale research project. We had some strange things as well, like one of the research agreements, for example, required that the principal investigator show that they did some research training, and they had to do a particular course that was mandated by that hospital. So Professor Jeffrey Braithwaite, who's our lead investigator, probably 30-something years as a professor at Australian University, had to do an online how to do research course so that he could be approved by this hospital to be the chief investigator on the project. Some of the hospitals in the research agreement wanted right of veto over publication. You know, for a university, it's just
not on.
You know, you can't do that. Negotiating these things, you know, just held up the project. You know, just a long time to negotiate. One thing that that is disappointing in our study that you'll see when we publish it is that we had a lot of withdrawals because of the issue with the delays. Out of our 60 hospitals that we were initially recruited, we've only got 32 in the final sample. I mean, we can show, you know, why people withdrew, but it was almost always because of a delay and often a change of principal investigator. A lot of the investigators change.
Thanks so much for your time, Robin.
Okay, thanks very much, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.